Episode 301 of the Roguecast, recorded August 11th, 2020. You can't just retcon Nazis into the Civil War. It is episode 301, and it is a brand new era, right? Is it a new era?
Yeah, sort of.
Or is it the same era?
You know, we used to line up our episode numbers with comics, and 301 to me is the Todd McFarlane era of Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah.
I forget exactly what was in issue 301.
It's not Chance, is it? Chance was like earlier than that.
Oh, man, I don't know.
A black cover thing, maybe?
Yeah, man. Sorry, I mentioned something and it's a complete tangent. Edit that out.
Damn, I think you know we don't edit.
There is no editing.
So we've got Anna in today. That's the story.
Right,
that's
killed Nick and Anna is replacing him.
Yeah.
Yes. Until next week when we will revive Nick and Nick might be back.
Yes.
Or maybe not, who knows?
Yeah, it'll depend on if the blood magic ritual works.
He may enjoy his dirt nap. Anybody might want to take a dirt nap during 2020.
I was going to say in 2020, I imagine.
Yeah, that's true. Except, as we know, the afterlife is probably worse.
Yeah, that's fair.
Do we know that?
Everything's been getting worse.
We've assumed.
Yeah. I was like, are you referencing some movie or something like that?
No, it's just another conversation where I explained to Anna that likely the afterlife is worse because every year gets worse, so why would the afterlife be any better?
Yeah.
It's the undiscovered
death
country.
Death is not a reprieve, Dave.
It's the undiscovered country.
I was trying to work in my some Shakespeare in there in class to join up.
Oh, I thought it was just a Star Trek reference.
I think after the Todd McFarlane Spider-Man...
You can only go up.
Yeah, there's only one direction.
Tom McFarlane's Shakespeare.
Metal Shakespeare.
Honestly, there's probably a market for that.
Honestly, I'd probably read that.
You should write it.
You know, I just gotta say, sometimes, like, Titus Andronicus is pretty medical. Medical? Metal. As is. I mean, it's sort of medical, too. They do chop somebody's tongue out, so.
So, yeah, if, you know, they did the whole Star Wars Shakespeare thing, so why not a metal Shakespeare series?
Do you think that Todd McFarlane would draw that if I wrote it?
I think it's possible. I think metal would be the big ingredient to get him in.
What if instead I got Greg Capullo?
That's the same thing. They're the same guy, right?
But Greg Capullo actually draws stuff now, and McFarlane just, I don't know, sues people? I don't know, he's in a documentary now, and people have been enjoying the documentary.
Yeah.
McFarlane, I think he's one of those people that is kind of like a doofus, but kind of knows he's a doofus, and I can understand that kind of has an appeal.
I saw a fellow retailer declaring that he thought Todd McFarlane should be declared the new Stan Lee of comics.
Bold.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I have roughly a million choices ahead of him.
That was the most diplomatic answer.
But you know, also, there is no new Stan Lee. That's just the thing.
That's the Stan Lee. Yeah,
there was, exactly. And there was a certain like time and place, like when there was really only sort of the big two. Actually, I guess there was always like Gold Key Comics and all these other guys too. But Stan had like a voice that you kind of can't like be that guy anymore. There's too much, too many disparate companies, I guess.
Yep.
It's almost like how things were like when there was only three channels on the TV. MASH could be this thing that everybody watched, and Stan was this guy that everybody knew.
It's true.
But yeah.
Plus, there's a certain Stan's hucksterism is likable because he was America's grandpa.
Yeah.
Now hucksterism is annoying.
Yeah, it's true. And also, Stan wasn't without his problems.
No, Stan was perfect in every way.
That's true. It's both not true and true.
All right, so quick store news, just the games that we've gotten in recently. We got a new edition of Fiasco.
Yeah, the sort of one-night role-playing game / party game that's like a crime heist flick.
Coen Brothers, the RPG?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super fun. Have you played that, Anna?
I haven't, but I would love to.
Yeah, but for COVID times, it'd be a great store get-together game.
It's true.
I do have, because I kickstarted this for the store, I do have a Roll20 version of this new Fiasco.
Okay, well maybe we'll figure out how to do it on Zoom or whatever. Yeah.
That's awesome. It comes, now that it has like cards and stuff like that, it's a fancified edition of a game that we all really like.
Yeah.
And it's pretty, it's like $30 for the box set. It's a good
price. I think it's quite reasonable.
There's also Throw Burrito Extreme. Which is the guys who did Exploding Kittens.
Yep.
This is their game where, I don't know, some kind of game where you throw burritos at people. These have giant out. These
it's like
are,
a plush burrito,
these
right?
These are giant inflatable burritos so you can do it outdoors in COVID times.
Yeah.
Wait, that's the game? You just throw burritos
at people? I think there's more to
it. There's trivia or something, I don't know.
You know, the, like, the, like, what's the other cat? Unexploded...
Unexploded kittens.
Kittens.
Unexploded kittens?
Wait. Exploded kittens. Unexploded cow was a game a million years ago.
Unexploded cow was a game. The cows do not explode. Kittens do explode.
I see.
But you know, it's the guy who does, what is that, the oatmeal?
Yes.
That's the one. He's a funny dude. I'm sure it's funny.
Okay. Sure.
And yeah. More than just merely throwing burritos.
Not just burritos.
As if that's not enough.
Did we already at one point have, like, the non-extreme version of this game?
We
That's
did.
What I was wondering
we
about.
Okay, because, like, I do recall some guys came in and they picked it up and they were like, do you want to just hit each other with this?
It's...
And then they bought it.
Yeah.
The original one was sedate throw burrito.
This is, yes. Classy throw burrito.
Well, those guys were real excited to hit each other, so I think maybe they got the wrong
That's
one.
For the gentleman burrito whacker. When you hold your burrito with a pinky extended...
And then also, we got Wingspan back in for the first time in a long time.
What? That's nuts.
Is it gone already?
No, we still have it.
We've only been asked about that game 100,000 times.
I thought it was a myth, actually.
I love Wingspan. I played it. It is a game about bird watching, but it's super fun.
That doesn't sound fun.
I know.
No, but like, you've worked here long enough. You should know. There's some games that don't sound fun that are fun.
The theme never sounds
But maybe
sounds
you haven't
great.
Played enough games. I don't know.
I mean, that's fair. I mean, I have played some games. Like, the park one, I liked that game.
Yeah.
And there's no way you could have convinced me that a game about pretending to go to national parks was fun. But I did actually thoroughly enjoy that.
Yep.
So yeah, I guess maybe that's fair.
Yeah, and then we got the coolest hell Sapphire Dragon.
Oh, right, the actual miniature for D&D.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's
Oh, I
so
want
cool.
one so bad, but I shouldn't.
it's like clear plastic, but it's like dark, deep blue.
Translucent blue.
Yeah, it's like gorgeous.
Cool looking. All right, let's talk news. There's quite a few things. One of the big ones is that Mulan is going to premiere on Disney Plus in September for a small charge of $30.
Just small, quote unquote.
This is the big live action Mulan thing. What's the deal? When you get it, you've got it as long as you have Disney Plus.
If you have
right?
Disney Plus, you pay $30, and Mulan basically goes into your Disney Plus library.
Got
so
it.
As long as you're paying your Disney Plus, so it's very smart of them. If you already have Disney Plus, it's $30 more. And if you don't have Disney Plus, well, you might want to get Disney Plus so you can watch Mulan.
I kind of been wanting to see that movie.
Are you gonna do this?
Nope.
Sorry.
There was like early on. I kind of wanted to watch that movie where liberal elites hunted conservatives.
The Hunt.
The Hunt. Even though I understood it was like muddled messaging and was not that great, but I had heard enough good stuff. When it first came out, though, it was like a $20 rental or something like that, and I was like, I don't want to watch it that much.
Yeah.
And so I just held out and, like, you know, several months later rented it for, like, $5.
Oh, you did watch it?
I did eventually watch it.
All right. I have not watched it yet.
It's okay.
Okay.
But it's not without its moments. It does have a sort of muddled message, though.
So what I think is interesting is you could follow the divide on here between...
Who's the guy who made the Watchmen TV show? Damon Lindelof?
Damon Lindelof.
I think Damon Lindelof co-wrote it or something like that.
That explains
so,
why
So, speaking of muddled.
I think this... I saw this divide along with my friend lines of people who had kids and people who did not have kids. Because people who have kids are like, $30 for a new Disney movie? Fuck yeah, I'll do that.
Interesting.
Because it's so... If you have, like, three kids, and you pay $30, it's cheaper than going to the movie, and they're going to watch it 100 times.
Right. That's like 100 times you could be free of the little bastards.
Yeah.
That's what I understand, right?
Well, and I guess, the thing is like, if I were, like, sharing a household with, like, maybe 5 people, I could conceive of us going in to shell out the $30 because we would, I assume, be sharing an account. But yeah, the idea of me being like, I'm going to order a pizza and spend $30 on Mulan, and it's like, that is a $45 date for just myself. That's just going to make me feel lonely.
I think that's kind of where I am, too.
Yeah, I am in the same boat. I don't really, even though I have kids, my kids watch YouTube and whatever the hell they feel like watching. So, yeah, it's like, I don't have a particular reason, but this is, they're saying it's not a trial balloon. I feel like it has to be a trial balloon, and I think I want this to be successful so that they'll release Black Widow for, like, $30, because I will absolutely pay $30 to see Black Widow.
Yeah, I think that if it wasn't a trial, they would have done it with something like Black Widow.
Yeah.
But I think that because they did it with Mulan, it absolutely is.
Yeah, for sure. I think that this is one of those nail in the coffin of a movie of movie theaters, too. It's like, the movie theater has got to be really nervous about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am, because there's no movie I really want to pay $30 for, and because I like the movie theater going experience, I want this to fail. I'm in favor of it going down.
Yeah.
But I think it will probably do pretty well.
Well, I was doing some back of the envelope math with a friend online, mm-hmm. and he was looking at the numbers, and Disney Plus has 60.5 million subscribers now. $30 a piece.
That's how many people follow you on like Twitter, I think, right, Anna?
God, I wish.
It's not that many.
They don't have to give a cut to the movie theater, so that doubles their profit essentially. Basically, what it comes down to is if they get 10% of their Disney Plus audience to buy this at $30, they have made as much as whatever the last movie was they got released in theaters. I can't remember what it was, but it's not nothing. Like, they need 10% of the odds to go in on this, and they will make a huge amount of money. I think that's pretty likely to happen. We'll see.
I would like for them to not make that money, and then realize that if they had sold this movie for the price of, like, an actual movie,
yeah,
that they would have made a ton more.
Yeah, oh, don't get me wrong. I don't want movies to start costing me $30.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think that nothing good can possibly come of a world where a company who controls almost all of the media decides, what if we sold our product for way higher because we can and no one can stop us?
But here's the funny thing is, you're always paying for time. Like, the only reason to pay $30 for Mulan is because you want to watch it right now. Because the truth of the matter is, in probably 3 months, it's going to be $10 on iTunes.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
I'm patient, man.
I'm a patient man when it comes to Mulan. I'm not so patient when it comes to the MCU. If they put Eternals out, I'm going to buy Eternals at whatever they charge. God, I hope Disney's not listening to this podcast.
They're like, that Randy guy will pay like $1 million for that.
All we need is like 50 of him and we're good.
Actually, if they start making movies for me, like, I'll pay a lot for a D-Man movie. Give me D-Man and Mockingbird teaming up. Sure, that's great. I'll pay for that. Alright. Speaking of people making movies just for people,
yep.
Doctor Strange 2 is reportedly casting a teenage America Chavez for Anna.
Yeah, it's just for me. Thanks, Disney. I won't pay $30 for it.
How much will you pay for America Chavez and Doctor Strange 2?
I mean, I think that if you were to wring money out of me, like if they were like trying to sell me a ticket day one,
yeah.
I would pay at most $20.
Alright, good to know.
There are a lot of things that I would do for America Chavez to be, like, a big part of the MCU, because she's my favorite.
I do wonder if it's going to be, like, a cameo, essentially, because this is the multiverse thing, right? Like, they've already got, like, Scarlet Witch and some of the other stuff in there. Like, they can't possibly have that much room for America Chavez.
I guess if they did, like, I bet it will be a, if it is a cameo, a bigger than average cameo.
It'll be a fun cameo, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, if it's literally just, like, Doctor Strange, like, flipping through dimensions, like, TV channels, he's like, who's this? Oh, no, I don't want it. I'll be, like, super, super fucking disappointed, but.
Yeah. That would be disappointing.
This does bring up, by the way, a notion of we talked about, you know, I wouldn't pay $30 for a movie, but if I could pay Disney $20 to make sure that D-Man's in Avengers 5, if we can all just start paying them, you're like, just cast this guy in your movie, here's $30.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess then I'd finally get my Wonder Man movie.
Yeah, this is the democratization of movies.
Then and only then will you get your Wonder Man
movie. We could put some money together and have a Wonder Man and America Chavez movie.
Yeah, that's fine.
D-Man.
I don't know what that...
Nope. No D-Man.
What does that movie look like is what I want to know.
$90 gets us America Chavez, D-Man... And whatever dumb thing Dave said.
This is like The Hangover, but with lesser-known heroes.
Yeah.
No one wants this movie. Disney should not make this movie.
No, I want this movie.
Three people in the world want this movie.
Three people who won't give
and
you $30.
Dave's not sure about it at this point.
Listen, those characters could work together in a story. I could write it. What are America Chavez's powers?
She can punch through dimensions.
I know she had dimension-y stuff going on.
But she's like super strong, super tough.
Yeah, she's super
like
strong.
If she's just finding a giant robot, she doesn't have to punch it into another dimension, right?
No, yeah, she can just punch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I know that what we just pitched, the D-Man America Chavez Wonder Man movie, sounds pretty odd.
Yes.
It is not odder than the Blazing Saddles remake. Because Blazing Saddles, apparently, the 70s Western comedy.
With a lot of, sort of...
racially
tinged humor, yeah. From Mel Brooks, who basically everybody will always forgive because he's a good-natured, funny guy.
Also, it was hilarious.
Isn't that also the movie that Mel Brooks himself specifically said, you couldn't make this movie today?
He did, and he's right.
I'm wondering what the thought process behind somebody today looking at the movie and going, we should make this movie today.
Well, thought process is a little weird because they're remaking it as an animated feature.
Yep.
About cat and dog samurai?
What?
You know what this is? You know what? Weirdly, the reason why... I heard this has some strange production backstory behind it, and But thinking about how Zootopia took on racial relations and things like that in a really pretty complex stuff in a satisfying way that was not... that was told through sort of metaphor... I feel like the kind of racial politic humor of this could translate into what rival clans and the samurai thing.
It has nothing to do with cowboys.
No, the film company Align is financing an animated movie titled Blazing Samurai, which will feature elements from Blazing Saddles. I don't know which elements. Maybe just the N-word. It's just samurai cats and dogs constantly saying the N-word.
That's terrible.
The story follows a dog named Hank who dreams of becoming a samurai.
Hank is not a samurai.
When he becomes
name,
in charge of protecting Kakamucho, he learns the town is populated entirely by cats. Okay, I see where they're going with this.
Yeah.
The dog is the black sheriff.
Do they not realize that, like, samurai were known for horsemanship and that they in fact had saddles and they could have called it Blazing Saddles? Or perhaps if they wanted to be a little more punny, Blazing Cattles? Like cat saddles?
Yeah, come interesting.
On. I mean, cattle is definitely a word. Don't think too hard about that part of it.
That happened in Mars Attacks, actually. I remember it was like horrible cows burning scene.
Anyway,
thanks for bringing up that horrible memory, Anna.
I'm sorry.
So whenever I think 2020 hasn't gotten weird enough, something like this comes along.
You know what? If all 2020 was just that kind of benign, wow, that's strange.
Yeah.
That'd be okay.
It'd be better.
Yeah. It's just, it'd be significantly
that's merely
better.
Strange.
Yeah.
Was it, I can't remember.
It's not odious.
Was it one of y'all who showed me the thing that was getting passed around online that Cats 2019 was like a break in reality?
Yes, that okay. was where it broke off, yeah.
Well, I prefer the theory that Cats 2019 actually absorbed a lot of the weirdness.
It was supposed to be worse?
Yeah, and it was supposed to be worse. So that
it might all
be
got pulled into, was it Melissa McCarthy? No. Rebel Wilson.
What?
Who was the cat in there? Anna's dying. It all got pulled into that part, which was the worst part of that movie.
Where she unzipped her skin and...
just... That basically just had all the worst stuff in the movie, her seeing her scenes.
So there are two people in the server who have seen the cat movie, and one person who hasn't. And,
And one will not be stopping laughing until 2022. No.
All right. It was pretty horrible. But...
I'm going to move on to the next story.
Yep.
They've got a director for Captain Marvel 2, and it is Candyman's Nia DaCosta, which is interesting.
Just a minute, it sounded like you were about to say, and it's Candyman.
Candyman has not come out yet, right?
That was one of those delayed by COVID craziness.
But the word
that is
buzz,
to say the remake of Candyman.
The buzz was good.
Like, what is Candyman?
So, 80s Wes Craven movie being remade. The movie itself was, I just saw recently, and I thought it was a slasher movie, because I knew this guy had, was like, it was about a black guy who had been killed, like, and like something with a hook for a hand, and he had been killed by bees, like covered in honey and left to die by bees. That is actually part of the urban legend in the story. The story actually ended up being this fairly sophisticated thing that actually also had dealt with, like, gentrification and, like, cultural appropriation in a somewhat sophisticated way for an 80s movie. Like, I actually highly recommend it. It's not that sort of pulp lurid at all. It's actually pretty thoughtful in its way. A little clunky because it was still the 80s, but...
Yeah.
Wasn't it, who's the, Jordan Peele
produced.
So like Get Out and stuff like that. This was he was picking it up for a remake, obviously, because this kind of has the sort of social relevance that he's looking for in his horror movies.
It's described as a spiritual sequel. It's returning to the Chicago neighborhood where the legend began.
Yep.
Which is now gentrified.
Huh.
And interestingly, Nia DaCosta will be the first black woman to direct a Marvel movie. With Captain Marvel 2.
Mm-hmm.
Also, this is interesting. Her first thing, she wrote and directed a crime movie called Little Woods, starring Tessa Thompson as a reformed drug runner in North Dakota. And now I want to see that.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like a fun movie.
Yeah, I'm in for that.
Interesting. I wonder, I guess, does that mean that the Candyman remake was, like, super good? And that the people at Disney saw it?
I think there's definitely some buzz around her. Yeah.
Interesting.
So that's cool. I'm curious to see.
Yeah, that actually all sounds good to me, and I do want to see the Candyman remake. Although it is a, you know, what's interesting
would
is that
pay
I heard
$30 for it.
Nope.
What if we put Wonder Man in it?
Yep. listen. I don't know if y'all know what a good guy Simon Williams is.
He could fight Candyman, or maybe you say Wonder Man three times in the mirror and he appears.
He's strong.
So how did you say the Candyman died? He got covered in honey and killed by bees?
It was like that one of these horrible racial incidents, like in the Civil War or something like that, where like he looked at a white woman and they chopped off his hand and like jammed a hook into it. And then they covered him in honey and left him to be killed by a swarm of bees.
Well, that's really dark, and I'm very upset, because I was just going to say Wonder Man could be there because he's fighting Swarm, which is who killed the Candyman.
Well, Swarm is a Nazi made of bees.
Yes, he is. So.
Can't just retcon Nazis into the Civil War. Those are two different eras of jerks. They get to be separate.
I mean, they like to include
there's,
themselves.
There's
with
some
one
crossover.
These days.
There's some crossover.
We?
Yeah.
So there's also a Knight Rider movie reboot in production.
I saw that. They said I heard that they want to keep with what they described in the thing I saw as like the subversive tone of the original, and I'm like
anti-establishment tone. I'm like, really?
They did. You know, all I remember is that in the opening narration that they, you know, well, he was a guy who was supposed to have been dead, right?
Yep.
And they like covered up his death. And they were like, you're off the grid now. Let's give you a robot car to fight for justice. Which I'm
hoping...
The
Foundation for Love, Law, and Government. Flag.
Is that what it was?
That's what it's called.
That's the original?
Yep.
That doesn't sound very subversive.
No, it does not.
In fact, it sounds the opposite of that.
I actually don't know. I assume that he mostly went up against drug dealers... and...
It was the 80s.
Not anti-establishment.
Probably some evil... there probably were some evil corporate dudes in there.
I know there was an evil truck.
Yeah.
That talked.
There was also an evil car. Do you know what the car's name was?
Car.
Car is correct.
Wow, that's not...
but with a K.
It was K. And, were there, two R's or something like that?
R's.
Like,
oh, wow.
Because
okay,
Kit is the talking car that is his co-star. And Kit stands... is Knight Industries 2000.
Yeah.
So... They don't normally abbreviate, numbers with the first letter.
No, they do not.
Stop asking the question.
His name should be Key 2.
No, what... I mean, this was the 80s, and you know how lucky you are. Wasn't Knight Industries totally tubular?
So here's what I was thinking, is that I would almost want it to be... the movie remake to be set in the 80s, and to have, tech that was, around then, but, actually, a little more smart, a little more Michael Crichton-y, in a pulp way... than the show, but I assume this will be a modern day fancy souped up car.
Probably.
That sounds awful.
I mean, maybe they'll do. I would want.
Well, you know, it'd be crazy if it really was subversive.
Yeah.
Like, if he really was, you know, like it was like pushing the boundaries, cutting edge progressive, going after the people who really need to be taken down in this world.
Like, he's, I don't know, some sort of. I don't want to say maybe ex-military, but sent on a terrible mission by the government, and he discovers that he's actually there for bad reasons.
Yeah.
So they think he's dead, and now he's like, I'm going through, taking out all the bastards who sent me on this.
Yeah, I want
mission.
This to be the new be cool. Knight Rider 2022 or whatever it's going
to
be.
I want this to make men angry the way that Fury Road made men.
Yeah, all right.
I'm good with that.
Well, cast a woman driver. That's really all it takes.
That's really all you need.
It is all,
yeah.
Yeah, actually, I'm sure. What's Charlize Theron
for? And but keep a male voice for the car as her servant.
she is. She's doing the old guard.
Oh, right. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I would like it to be, I think, and this is just off the top of my head, kind of like the Charlie's Angels that McGee won. I want a little self-aware, yeah, but still fun. Like, that could be fun.
I don't want it to be fun.
I do think that probably is the smartest commercial tone to take for them, would be kind of a campy but with cool action and stuff like that. But I still hope that there is some legit, a little bit of edge to it.
I would actually, I think, the more that I think about it, I would actually kind of like for it to be like almost an 80s period piece.
Yeah.
But like set in the future of 20 minutes from 1980. It's like the Shadowrun thing.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Max Headroom.
Yeah, I think
yeah,
that'd be
just
super fun.
An 80s vision of the future, that'd be pretty awesome.
They used to have those 50s futures. I would love to do some 80s futures.
Yeah. Yep. All right, we've written the movie.
Okay, good deal.
You're welcome.
So BBC's Terry Pratchett series, The Watch, is going to debut in January 2021. I don't remember too much, but these are Magic Cops, right?
Has anybody...
Yeah,
have
so...
Have you read them?
They are the Ankh-Morpork, I think. It's been, like, forever
since
I've read these books. But they're the City Watch of...
it's the Discworld series.
Oh, okay.
A very long-running... comedic fantasy novel series from Terry Pratchett.
Literally, like, 50 books in it.
Yes.
Like, so many of them.
Yeah.
And
if I'm not mistaken, he always had kind of an eye on social commentary.
Yeah,
right?
He did.
I've actually not read these. It's been on my to-do list forever, but I don't generally... Comedic books don't do much for me. I was actually thinking about downloading the audiobook, because sometimes hearing the audio of the comedic timing and stuff kind of... That's more winning.
Yeah.
So I'm going to maybe check it out sometime before this happens. And this is not too far out.
January 2021.
Okay.
Which doesn't seem that far out, but we know also 2020 is moving, so it's effectively 5 years.
I mean...
What's the...
I feel like January 2020 was like 3 days ago. So...
What, Anna, you've been following this at least a little bit. What was the casting decisions? Like, I've seen, the picture I've seen of the cast looks cool. What was the casting decisions that people don't like? Or?
So, for one, I know that one of the things that specifically, like, I'm in a big Discord server with a bunch of, like, general nerds and RPG players and stuff like that. And one of the biggest criticisms that I saw that people were, like, upset about is, like, the sort of, like... The thing that got axed was, like, a lot of the body diversity amongst the characters.
Oh,
like, one of the characters is canonically supposed to be, like, a very plump lady who's, like, sort of like a...
Did they CW'd her?
Yeah, they CW'd her. She's supposed to be, like, from what I gather, like, a Nero Wolf type, which is to say, like, a sort of smart but not, like, super physically active detective, like a armchair detective kind of
character.
Granted... This is just me gleaning from what people are saying.
Yeah, okay.
The last time I read these books was, like, 15 years ago.
Right, right.
And then I think that just the general other criticism is that maybe 2020 is a bad time for a cop show.
Right.
But it looks cool.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if, like, if Terry Pratchett's approach might kind of supersede it, if the fantasy break from, you know... From the contemporary stuff might make it seem better, but I don't know. Yeah,
I mean, also,
it certainly is an odd time for it.
This looks like really modern. I don't know. Maybe I was misinterpreting it when reading it, but I always thought of these characters as less like modern looking cops, like in leather jackets with shields and stuff.
Right. They just that's
the
visual affectation. That's a visual affectation that they chose. But yeah, I know. Like, this was in some ways a traditional fantasy series, maybe a little steampunkish or some. Things like that in there. I want to see a trailer for it. I want to catch the vibe.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm at least interested, because at least for me, I think the comedy will come through more when I see it delivered by some characters.
True.
What else we got?
So Amazon Prime has officially announced a series of A League of Their Own.
The old movie about the lady baseball team, right?
Yep. No, this is going to be a new characters. It's a new different generation of women playing professional baseball. The notable thing is that Abby Jacobson from Broad City is one of the leads, and Darcy Carden from The Good Place is in there.
That was that movie was a period piece, right?
It was. And I believe this is still a period piece.
Okay, so like the 50s or something like that.
It says it takes a deeper look at race and sexuality, so it's going to go not be all white girls.
Okay, and this was a comedic movie, yeah. but like I actually never saw it, so I don't know if what the drama quotient was.
It was, I mean, it has drama. It was definitely a comedy, but it was really good. It had Penny Marshall directing.
Tom Hanks was the coach.
Yeah, Gina Davis was the lead. Rosie O'Donnell and Madonna were really memorable in it. Yeah. It's really good.
Okay, it's weird. It's not the kind of thing I would have thought to be expanded on, but as far as like that premise of like exploring racial and gender issues in the time.
Yeah,
there's like basically endless amounts of things you can say.
Yeah.
So yeah, sure. I'm potentially interested.
Yeah, same. Potentially interested. This is interesting. Alexa, the Amazon robot thing.
Yeah. You talk to it. Happens.
They have a Starfinder series.
Oh right, Starfinder the RPG
from the
Pathfinder people.
Yep. Which we have, and which I love. I've bought, like, all those books.
It's basically, like, a very elaborately crafted version of the Pathfinder fantasy game set in, like, a future.
Yeah, it's a sci-fi D&D, very
yeah,
much
yeah,
so.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Well, you can go, if you have an Alexa, like, my son has an Echo, and I told him about this, because he really loved when we played Starfinder before COVID times, and you can say, Alexa, play Starfinder, and it will guide you through, it's got this, like, choose your own adventure thing you can play, and it'll describe the. It's like basically Alexa is the DM.
That's cool.
It describes the room, describes what's going on.
You've actually heard this, Randy?
Yeah, I've heard. But it gives you like two or three options. It's like, do you want to talk to the goblin? Do you want to attack the goblin? Whatever. And then you roll dice. Like you can tell it's a roll dice, or you can roll a dice and tell it what number you have.
Huh?
So he had his dice out.
Yeah.
And was basically playing with Alexa as the DM.
Oh my god!
And the voice cast on this includes Nathan Fillion.
Yep.
No, not our customers.
Yeah.
Nathan Fillion is one of the. And then, oh man, I forget who the voice is. There's a woman who's voicing their android bounty hunter, and it's a good actress. So,
let me ask you this: is there like sound effects like pew pews and spaceship sounds or
from
anything?
From what I heard, it was pretty light on that, but I gather
it gets
more as it goes on.
Okay. Hmm.
The first chapter is free, and then you can buy the rest of it. It's loosely based on their first adventure path, and I think you can buy all
That's
six
cool.
episodes for like $10.
Yeah, I'd like to check that out.
Yeah,
That's
it
awesome.
Sounded fun, and like there's a lot of kids who want to play but don't like having learning how to DM is one of the hardest things. So if you have a computer DM for you, it's super fun. It's a fun way to try it.
And also, if you're like me, this might be your only opportunity to play a game of D&D where people don't ask you to DM.
Yes.
What if Alexa did?
I'd like to play that, but I'd like you to DM now.
Yes.
Anna, can you take it from here?
Yep,
I'm going to be busy the next few weekends.
But I still want to play.
God damn
no,
it.
No, this is my nightmare.
Welcome to 2020. This is the Terminator future we weren't prepared for. They're going to put us in slave pits and make us DM their games.
I mean, honestly, not much changes for me.
Alright, speaking of games, they have confirmed, though there's not much info, the Rocksteady Studios, who did the Arkham games, is doing a Suicide Squad game.
That's
pretty
cool.
And they confirmed it with a picture of Superman with a sight on the back of his head.
Yeah, the sight was spelled out, the crosshairs of it were said Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
It was a neat little image. And I assume, suggest that that'll probably, if I had to guess, that's probably like the big mission in it, with some kind of takedown Superman.
What if it starts with that? You just blow his head off and then it's...
it just ends. Oh, jeez.
Hardcore. If I had to guess, it'll be a little something like Tom Taylor's thing, where in the end, you're going to end up having to subvert the, you know, bad guys running things in some way, and maybe probably DC won't kill off Superman. Although, who knows what's going on at DC right now.
I know, it's impossible. They're just let's off him.
Yeah.
Just shoot Superman in the back of the head. It's fine. No one will notice.
That's
no
not a metaphor
no
for anything.
But if that's that's a good game design team, I like Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
I still want this game to be an XCOM-style game.
We all
do,
Dave.
Where you sub in the characters and then you pick and choose and grow your team and all that. I can't quite picture how else you make it work, to be honest.
I feel like you won't... They'll probably have a point where you play different characters. I mean, they managed in the Arkham games where you could play, like, Robin or Nightwing.
Yeah.
So they can definitely... Or Catwoman.
Suicide Squad just have such a weird range of powers.
I'm thinking of, like, what I would like is, like, a Mass Effect-style thing.
Yeah.
Where, like, Either they have you play one character, they have you pick one character.
Like, bots are running the other dudes.
And then, yeah, you, like, select your team of people who you want to hang out with you, but,
that
like,
makes
you generally
sense.
Play
yeah,
the same.
I can see that, yeah. I think most of their powers are could be balanced so that, like, even if the Enchantress was, like, one of your team members, she could just be doing sort of blasty spells or create a gravity well, like,
yeah.
just like it's Mass Effect
Mass
stuff.
Effect.
Captain Boomerang be throwing various trick boomerangs, Deadshot yep. be blasting away at dudes. Yeah, I could see it.
I'm excited for it. We always love Suicide Squad, even though it's gone up and down.
Big ups
quality.
And downs, but yeah, when it's done right or done well, it's a super cool premise.
Another bit of game news. They're doing a Power of Legends of Grayskull, the Master of the Universe role-playing game. this is powered by Cortex, who are the same guys doing the Dragon Prince game.
Yep.
And it sounds like, I'm wondering if basically someone at the Cortex was like, hey, let's get a bunch of licenses. But it's basically, it says you can design your own master, overcome high stakes and adventure in a world where magic meets technology. I do love the idea of coming up with names like Fisto and
yep.
And Manny Faces.
I would be Crabulon.
Crabulon.
Yeah.
Well,
it's not as good as
Fisto.
Clawful, who was the crab man back in the day.
Yeah, this is... Okay, this is Fandom. I guess they're the guys who bought Cortex from Margaret Weiss Productions.
Uh-huh.
And they're the ones who maybe are like... going through. Oh, they run D&D Beyond.
Is this a Kickstarter thing?
I think so, although it hasn't gone live or anything yet, so...
I was thinking it was an approaching Kickstarter,
yeah.
but I'm not 100% sure. Anyway, the He-Man game sounds like something that probably should have been done any time in the last 40 years.
Yep.
Maybe they want to capitalize on how successful She-Ra was.
I mean...
Why they would do that with a He-Man game and not a She-Ra game is beyond me, but...
It is weird that there's not, like, a She-Ra game.
Honestly, yeah. I'd buy the fuck out of a She-Ra game right
or
now.
Or Steven Universe. Like, there's not a Steven
yeah.
Universe game. That's weird.
Steven Universe doesn't seem like... well, I've seen, like, it quite would translate to a game.
Indie RPG? I could totally see it.
Yeah,
indie RPG,
I
suppose so.
But...
There's not enough punching and murdering in there.
There's quite a lot of punching in that game, or in that show, Dave.
I don't know. It seems like... It seems too thoughtful for gamers.
Dang. Jeez, Dave.
Y'all have GM'd. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Murder
don't pretend
almost,
you
yeah.
know.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, that's fair.
And
almost
Steven,
every...
like, isn't he wholesome? He's
yeah,
wholesome.
He's, like, nice, and he's like, don't hurt them. We should be friends with them instead.
Yeah.
Right.
That's
that doesn't
definitely
sound like gaming.
Not a, like,
no.
In fact, gamers probably want to shoot Superman in the back of the head.
Yeah.
About it,
what
so.
Kind of loot drop does Superman have?
He dropped a Krypton.
Spandex, I guess.
Look, that guy has a red thing over his... He's way higher level than us. If we manage to kill him, he's probably some really good loot. He's probably got, like, a really good magic sword in him.
Instead, you get Clark Kent's,
magic sword
you get Clark
Superman.
Kent's glasses.
Like, huh, I wonder why we got Clark Kent's glasses. Did Superman kill Clark Kent?
That's the only explanation.
Christopher Eccleston is making a return to Doctor Who.
In the form of
audio dramas.
Yeah.
Which, for Doctor Who fans, that's like the show. That's the big dance, right? And audio dramas, like, they've been doing this forever. When the TV show wasn't on, they were doing audio dramas.
I think there are, like, hundreds of them.
There are, yeah.
And they're, like, by all accounts, well-produced. I know a couple buddies who've been listening to them off and on for ages. Anyway, but yeah, Eccleston is kind of still my favorite Doctor. That was
Same.
The one that I came in on.
Mm-hmm.
I liked him too, but then didn't he, like, famously talk about how much he hated it?
Yeah, he himself seems like he's a curmudgeonly cranky pants, which is too bad, but...
No, that's your Master of the Universe character, curmudgeonly cranky pants. Cranky pants.
I think I saw like some quote from him talking about you know, that was very much a, you know, it's returning to a franchise I love, and I was like man, was he held at gunpoint to reading this?
Look, Christopher Eccleston gotta eat.
That's what
the
I figured.
The pandemic has been rough on us all. Who among us would not turn over our convictions?
Christopher Eccleston was scary in the dark future of 28 Days Later. He was military commander.
You said Christopher Eccleston and scary and dark, and I was like, don't talk about Thor the Dark World.
That's its own dark future.
It's true.
Alright, last thing on the docket, just to mention, this is still breaking right now, but There's some kind of big DC news that happened this week.
Oh, geez.
We don't know how all this one is going to tumble out.
No, but there were big layoffs across Warner Brothers, including like their TV division, their movie division, and their comics division. And for all that I have said very, very negative things about DC Comics on these podcasts for, 5 years at least, I don't wish anyone, I don't begrudge anyone their job. Like, a lot of people who loved comics lost their jobs yesterday, and that kind of sucks.
Yeah. It's, if nothing else, this is going to be a time of strange transition for DC. We don't know quite yet how they will emerge when all is said and done. You know, are they going to lean more into digital stuff? Are they going to... I don't know, make the characters public domain. What crazy thing will happen, we don't know. But DC is probably going to look, if nothing else, pretty different in the next 3 to 6 months than it does right now.
They're going to revamp Superman so he's more like John Wick.
Oh, I don't like that.
And then he's going to get his head blown off by Suicide Squad.
Oh, honestly, if Superman did turn into John Wick, he should probably have his head blown off.
Does that mean Luthor's going to kill Crypto?
Yeah.
And that's what sets him on a rampage.
I mean, it would set me on a rampage, too.
Yeah, don't kill Crypto. We'll all go on a rampage.
It's true.
All right. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics the week of August 12th, and it's not a light week, but it's a lighter week for new stuff, although there are a couple notable new books.
Yeah, the total number of books wasn't quite as big as we've had in some of the last few weeks.
I mean, there's some stuff. DC's Death Metal came in, Detective Comics part of Joker War.
Yep.
And then in the Marvel front, there's a bunch of Empire No. 5, which is the penultimate issue, a couple other Empire tie-ins, and of course... one of my favorite books, Immortal Hulk, came out this week, which is all cool. But what we're going to focus on, I think, is the new books that you might be interested in, like My Little Pony.
Yeah, shall we mention it? You know, this technically is issue 89 of the ongoing My Little Pony comic, but what is notable about this to the ponies, pony
the
fans and or bronies?
The bronies, the gonies, the tonies.
Now... like bronies was generally like the adult guy version followers of My Little Pony. Did like kids call themselves bronies too?
Gonies are girls who like My Little Pony, and tonies are I don't know what tonies are.
That's actually a real question.
I was trying to figure out something. I had no idea.
I mean, I think they just call themselves equestrians.
I mean, you have to be a citizen of Equestria.
Unironically, I think they call themselves equestrians.
Okay. No. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I guess that show must have gone 9 seasons
yes.
and then stopped because they are doing season 10 as the comic.
Yep.
I don't know, like, I haven't read up enough on this to know if it's got, like, some of the same show creators and stuff like that. They tend to do that.
They do.
You know? But if you are a pony fan who's like, where are my ponies at? Because you haven't seen them in a while.
Where are my ponies?
Here they are. season 10 taking place
ponies.
Exclusively in the land of comics. So yeah, you can get in on that. If you got some friends, nieces, nephews, kids also that might be pony fans, let them know.
Yeah. Anna, I know you and I enjoyed, not where Dave was on, the new Boom book, Seven Secrets.
Yeah, I liked it.
Is because you're this is a Tom Taylor Tuesday thing?
Tom Taylor Tuesday.
Yeah, Tom Taylor, Tom Taylor has made a name for himself primarily working at Marvel and DC.
Right.
Where he's done, the big books for him have been like, mostly I guess DC, where he did like Injustice, recently Deceased, but at Marvel he did X-23.
And All New Wolverine, yeah.
And, All New Wolverine.
And X-Men Red.
And yep. X-Men Red.
I like
which
that
only,
a lot.
Which
now
only Randy
why.
And Anna read.
Yes.
Oh no, I didn't read X-Men Red, I read the All New Wolverine.
Oh, you
yeah.
should read X-Men Red.
Yeah.
No, only Randy read that.
Only Randy read that.
That's what it felt like.
But he's definitely made a name for himself, and we are generally fans here. And he's gone and busted out his own indie book now.
So yeah, this is it's action. It's not superheroes really, but it is sort of heightened action.
Yeah.
You know what it kind of felt like in its way, like the action scenes in Inception.
Oh, I can see that.
A little bit of that kind of heightened action, or even like Matrix a little bit.
There's definitely a little bit of a manga vibe, too, especially some of the way the people move. It is the artist is Daniel DiNicolo?
I don't know who it is. And it reminded me a little bit of the Klaus artist. Klaus.
Yeah, I feel like she might have worked on, or he, I'm not sure, might have worked on some of their Power Rangers books. I know they're drawing some.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So
I did read this. This is a kind of a mystery that we're involving sort of like conspiratorial elements and secret societies.
Yeah.
And like lost like sort of treasures and items, and some kind of pretty badass people in the group, and some, I don't know, the emotional decisions that they have to make as far as their loyalty to the group versus their loyalty to their personal lives.
The seven secrets are described as words, wonders, weapons, and worse, with the power to change the world. And
that's super generic.
They have these people who are guardians of a secret. Now the secret could be anything. We don't actually know. It's not revealed. But it's almost irrelevant, because the point is that these people have to give up their entire lives to protect the secret.
Yeah.
There's someone looking for it, and then they have to make a choice between protecting the secret and living their lives, and it jumps between, like, now, a month ago, three months ago, and, like, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's telling us a story about someone whose life will be impacted by all of this. We're trying to talk around it. We don't want to give away the big secret.
It gave me some kind of saga vibes with the way, because it's narrated by the kid.
Yeah, you're right.
Right?
Yep.
And so, like, that's sort of what I was thinking as I was reading it. Was like, oh, so it feels like Saga, only it doesn't.
It's kind of a more high-octane action,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
Like, it's got that vibe of a Matrix, or... I never saw Sense8, but I got the vibe that it kind of...
I could see the
action
Sense8
was kind of heightened in it.
A little bit.
Yeah.
The conspiracy element of Sense8.
The conspiracy element, for sure, yeah.
It's a good first issue. I really liked it, and I've read 2 and 3 so far, so I know where it goes a little bit, and I'm really enjoying it.
It seems like one of those things that will end up likely being sort of a buzz book.
Yeah.
So, like, you should probably get in on it now.
Before it's, like, $100 for number one next week.
Yeah, or you're having to wait for a second printing or whatever.
Right.
I was initially a little worried, because most of what I like about Tom Taylor is his ability to, like, pick up existing characters and sort of, like, embody them.
Right,
and I was wondering how that would translate to someone writing their own characters.
Right.
But I actually liked everyone in the book.
Yeah, they're likable characters. His sort of matron-y woman who runs the Seven Secrets organization, mm-hmm. like, she's got that cool sensei thing.
Yeah.
And there's some fun moments, and
there's some banter between two agents who are like a couple.
Yeah,
and they
I like the bad guy for what we saw of him.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good. Also, there's a motorcycle chase.
It's true.
What's it called again?
Seven Secrets.
Secrets.
Also a good title, by the way.
Yeah.
Boom has some good titles. Like Seven Secrets, a good title. The one that Al Ewing is doing, which is We Only Find Them When They're Dead.
Also, something is killing the children, which is consistently my favorite thing to say.
Unbeatable.
And there's another one that they have. Once in Future is actually a pretty good title.
Once in Future is an awesome
title. So Boom has good titles.
I hadn't thought about that. Good job, Boom.
Yeah.
Good job, Boom.
Titles that tell you not exactly what it's about, but make you want to find out.
Like, would you say they're evocative?
Yes, they're evocative. What is killing the children, for example? I don't know. Something is.
Yeah.
Something is killing the children.
Actually, I've read it now, and I know what the something is.
You've got just enough information from the title, though, to start making guesses.
Speaking of good titles,
Werewolves.
The new Image book this week from Jason Howard, who did Astounding Wolfman and Super Dinosaur with Kirkman, is Big Girls, which is literally about kaiju-sized girls defending a city from kaiju-sized monster boys.
Yeah.
It's got some darkness to it.
It's pretty dark.
Like, it starts off looking like this sort of, like, fun romp, and then it gets real dark.
Yep.
Just this art. I didn't get a chance to read this. I really like the art in this.
I like the art,
I
too.
I like the art a lot.
Is it Ming Doyle? No. Who's the artist I'm thinking this looks a little like?
No, you're right. Ming Doyle's someone who's something like this, but
there's a little bit more kind of, maybe a slight, like, noirishness. There's a bit of a manga vibe.
Yeah,
sort of scratchy.
Yeah, it's like
coloring.
A rough-hewn thing. It has, like,
Yeah.
It is by no means, like, the characters don't look like manga stuff. It's more like some of the design sensibilities in it.
Well, and it's got that action. The action still has a manga vibe to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, his, you want someone who can design cool monsters for a book like this, and his monsters are cool looking.
It's true.
There's a little bit of Pacific Rim vibe to it, I feel like.
Yeah.
I think my one gripe with his art is he draws burrito guns.
Yeah, they definitely, like, it looks like she's wielding a book with a trigger on
yes.
it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, yeah.
But it does the job. But it's, again, this is one where I've read a few ahead, and I know where it's going, and it starts off looking like one thing and becomes a little more subversive, but if you like, say, Pacific Rim and that kind of stuff, I would say this is going to be right up your alley.
Mm-hmm.
There is a hardcover of more of Criminal, Cruel Summer, which is Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. This is their oversized hardcover. This is, I think, their first collection of their Image stuff that they did since bringing it back, and it's basically the story of Teague Lawless, who is their, I think, ex-military guy.
Mm-hmm.
See the ex-military guy?
Yeah.
Or is Ricky Lawless the ex-military guy?
I thought...
Oh, Teague's son, Teague Ricky.
Was the dad.
Teague is the dad.
Yeah.
Ricky is the son. And it's... Ricky and his friends are like... It's like their summer, their teenage summer, and Teague is working on a heist, and...
this is from the... This is from when Criminal came back a few years, a couple, 2-3 years ago, maybe?
Yep. Yep.
And those, they were just universally great stories. Yep. Every issue that came out, I loved. And so I have not flipped through this yet, but I'm sure that these are some of the best stories.
If I have, for example, the trade paperback of Criminal Volume 2,
yep.
Lawless,
yep.
If I pick that up, I'm not going to have any overlap, am I?
No.
This is like from...
This is new stuff.
Brand
yeah.
new stuff.
Yeah. Just those same characters, cool. different stories.
Yeah, he's done a bunch of stuff with these characters. He's built sort of a loose shared universe of these characters through this mm-hmm. like 70s to modern day. And they have generational, like, some of the dads, their kids have gotten into crime, and it's...
Yeah, he'll just, like, he can kind of say, like, I want to set this one in 1977, and, you know, be like, okay, so-and-so would be this age, you know, he'd be a little kid, but, and this guy who's an old crime boss now would be, you know, up-and-comer then. And he's always kind of doing fun stuff like that, and you're getting to, like, see what built the people that they became.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really good. I'm
probably almost one of the highest craft levels I know in comics.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Honestly, even if the vibe didn't connect with you, it's just so well done at what it's doing.
Dave, anything else on your reading list this week?
I don't think so. I mean, kind of a somewhat interesting reprint is that G.I. Joe has something called Snake Eyes the Origin, which is exactly what it sounds like, but this is not like a new origin. This is a reprint of the... two issues from the 80s that Larry Hama wrote where he kind of first revealed his Vietnam backstory, and it was a good backstory. Like, he actually had pretty satisfying reveals from most of these things that dealt with, like, his connection with Storm Shadow and mm-hmm. all of that stuff. Anyway, because of the way comics were then, you know, where there's always, like, multiple threads running through it, it's not like these were meant to stand alone, and so right. therefore there's, like, some... You know, not all threads are resolved in it. But yeah, if you just want to get a vibe of, like, the basics of Snake Eyes' backstory, especially since the first chapter of this is actually drawn by Larry Hama, it's so good. It has, like, the Soft Master in it, who ended up being a really good character. The Uncle Iroh, in some ways, of of the story. Anyway, that's a kind of cool thing for G.I. Joe fans, potentially.
And did I miss anything on your list?
Nope, I didn't read a whole lot this week.
All right. That is comics. We're going to be back in just a second, and we're going to talk about some TV and also another comic.
Oh.
Okay, so this is a little weird. We're going to talk about TV, but we're going to start by talking about a comic. Because Anna has just experienced the world of Sin City for the first time.
Yeah.
And when you said you'd read this... My initial thought was, she probably hated this. But instead, you really liked it.
Yeah, I mean, I have complicated feelings about it, obviously.
I mean, it's a Frank Miller project.
I mean, yeah, I think that I basically wrote Dave a dissertation as soon as I was done with it. I was like,
it was a very interesting conversation we had.
Yeah.
I was interested to hear your thoughts on it, and they had some a lot of depth of and a unique spin on some of it. But, yeah. like, in general, Marv, this is the first Sin City, a.k.a., yeah. what do they call it now, the Big Fat Kill?
Yeah, that's it.
That's usually the subtitle they tag it with.
I think it's A Dame to
Kill For. Oh, A Dame to Kill For. The next one was...
Dame to Kill For was the second one, right?
Is it not? No. I mean, that would make sense.
It's the Hard Something.
Hard Goodbye?
The Hard Goodbye. That's
that's it. Yeah.
Oh, my God, they all sound the same.
Yeah, they do.
In a way, they all are. But
Sin City, brick to the face.
But Marv, I think, is the most notable singular creation of it, and this was this was his story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it has a pretty definitive ending.
Yes, it does.
But because he jumps around in time, he can do more Marv stories.
Yeah.
It's just that we know what I guess technically we know what everybody's ultimate end is.
Yeah.
But let me ask you, as a first-time person, I know this is the kind of character you like. What was it that kind of drew you to Marv?
So... Oh man, I'm gonna launch into a whole thing. I really, really, really just like characters whose like whole shtick is like the very Captain America, like I could do this all day, mm-hmm. even though they've had their fucking dick kicked off.
Like, now that's not usually part of Captain America.
Well, I mean, but like the
well, there was Baron Zemo did, yes, yes, ish 75.
Fucking Nazis.
Yeah, that one is it's really valuable. It's CGC graded. The issue where Red Skull kicks off Cap's dick is worth a lot of money.
Actually, the next issue where Stan Lee apologizes for the on-screen.
That was weird. I mean, that's why they couldn't have the black label at Marvel, was Cap's dick was on-screen.
Oh, boy.
Anyway.
We're off to a start.
I really like those characters because there's just something about watching someone just get the absolute shit kicked out of them and knocked around and they still get back up and they're ready to fight.
You like a kind of tarnished hero.
I do.
Right?
I do.
Yeah.
And I think that the reason I like Marv so much is because he doesn't think he's a tarnished hero. He thinks he's a villain.
Yeah.
And I think that Frank Miller thinks he's a tarnished hero.
Yeah.
But I think that Marv is just a good person.
I mean, except for the murder and hallucinations.
He doesn't... I mean...
Hallucinations aren't...
Mental illness is not indicative of morality,
unless it leads you to murder people.
He only murders rapists and cannibals.
He took his pills whenever he could.
And so my point that I'm going
to
make
is his mama.
When you see Marv's on-screen interactions with any living human who is not a rapist cannibal, he's usually, like, very kind and protective. And I mean...
Right. There's his buddies at the bar, his mom.
At the bar, his mom. And then
even his, like,
going
what, parole officer, or who is
she? Yeah, but you could argue that, like, sure, those are all women, and it's kind of sexist because he's only nice to women. But I would argue that also, like, there's an instance where he first is trying to sneak up on the farm where Kevin is, where he gets hit in the head with a sledgehammer and knocked out, where he finds Kevin's dog, and rather than kill the dog, which would have been super easy, he, like, lets the dog lock its jaws around his, like, wrist.
Yeah.
Like, literally, he takes a hit so that he can knock the dog out so it doesn't have to die. I think that, like, he's... And I'm, of course, extrapolating because he doesn't ever interact with men who aren't evil.
He won't learn stories, though.
And I haven't read the other stories, so this is just me looking at this.
Yeah.
I think that's a generally fair appraisal.
I do, too. I actually think that's a reasonable... He is kind to dogs and unkind to cannibal rapists.
Yeah, which, honestly, if you're not kind to dogs and unkind to cannibal rapists, I don't want to know you.
There's somebody, so. I think it might be the character who's the second Sin City lead, at some point interacts with Marv, and I think he said something like, kind of, this might have been a vague reference to 300 from Miller, but he said something like, he would have been a king on, like, the battlefields of Sparta or something like that.
Well, and I think also that, like, sort of...
He's kind of a modern barbarian.
To the idea that he's Conan, but in a trench coat.
Yeah.
Do you like barbarians?
I fucking love barbarians. But anyway, like, I don't know, there's, like, a couple points in the story that I was reading it, and I was thinking, like, oh, he's, like, actually a good man.
Yeah.
He, in the scene where, like, his parole officer is, like, she's lost her hand.
Yeah.
He, like, gives her his coat, and he, like, gives her a hug.
Yeah.
And then when they're, like, escaping, he, like, literally is, like, holding her under his arm and shielding her from gunfire with his body. And again, you could argue it's sexist because he's kind of a chauvinist. And I think that in some instances that might be Frank Miller using him as a mouthpiece, and in some instances it's just a conceit of the genre, the noir genre.
For sure. Yeah.
It's
because, like, a lot of it's, like, spinning off of, like, old Mickey Spillane, two-fisted pulp novels.
But I do think that ultimately he is at least a tarnished hero, definitely not the villain he thinks he is.
Yeah.
Definitely, I think Marv is a good person.
Yeah.
And you can quote me on that.
I'd be interested to hear your reaction to the later ones, because I actually think Sin City's good all the way through. There's the last couple are a little bit muddled, but even those have stuff I'd recommend about them.
There's always... I mean, I'll be honest. The luridness of it is always enticing. His art is always enticing.
Yeah, the art's good.
Did you like the art?
Oh, I love the art. I thought it was beautiful.
Well, yeah, because we talked about some of these, like, amazing action sequences, like his Well, first of all, how he gets owned by Kevin, the meek-looking serial killer who's just unbelievably dangerous in a fight. But then later on, he does this thing where he...
I love it so much.
He makes a battle plan to go up against him, and there's like this checklist page of all his gear that's so good.
My mitts.
Yeah, and then he, in the fight, he manages to handcuff himself to this really slippery, squirmy... It's like a barbarian figuring out how to handcuff himself to a ninja.
Yeah,
and
it's
he's
super
like,
cool.
I can take the hits for a while, and if I can just get one good shot in.
Yeah.
and that's sort of what I really like about him as a character, is consistently you see, like, just a complete and utter disregard for his physical form.
Right.
And I think that this sort of, like, leads into, like, the lens that I was approaching it through.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, he thinks he's really ugly, he thinks he's huge and in the way, and it's, like, pretty much a constant point that he, like, mentions repeatedly from maybe the last half of the volume onward. And I think that, like, this sort of has manifested in some way as, I don't want to say specifically body dysphoria, but, like, almost effectively, like, such a low self-esteem to the point that it may as well be. And he's constantly putting his physical form on the line in order to do what he needs to do. And I think that it's possible that there might be some sort of a disconnect between, like, the person he, like, is in his head and, like, the body that
That's
he has.
That's interesting, 'cause I am almost certain, knowing Frank Miller, that he didn't intentionally put it in there.
Yeah.
But it's such an interesting read on what, like,
yeah.
It makes so much sense.
Yeah, and as I was reading it, like, I noticed, like, and this is, again, possibly just completely accidental, but there is a transgender character in the book, Katie, who is the bar owner.
Right.
And the one thing that I noticed was, so Sin City came out in like 1991 or 1992,
mm-hmm.
which was the year that I came out.
Right. AKA the year I was about to go off to college.
But at this time, in fact, actually, this is a year before Rachel Pollack would take over Doom Patrol from Grant Morrison.
Mm-hmm.
This is a book that has a transgender character in it, who is tastefully referred to by the medical terminology of the time period, which would be as a transsexual, not like as any sort of slur.
Right.
And Marv never once uses incorrect pronouns or describes her in a disparaging way.
Right.
And so I think that's really interesting to look at.
Huh.
Yeah, that Frank Miller, maybe even as kind of regressive as he can be at times,
was ahead of the curve on
was
that.
Ahead of the curve on
ahead
that.
Of the curve.
That's interesting.
Which is super fascinating, because even like when you look at Coagula, who Rachel Pollack created for Doom Patrol, and Rachel Pollack is herself a transgender woman, Coagula is like a sex worker, which sort of falls into the trope that trans people work in the sex like business.
Yeah. Right.
And like this character is a bar owner.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like it That's just something that I found particularly interesting as I was looking at it. And I think you could make the argument that it's just, like, lurid backdrop, which I think Dave mentioned.
Yeah, sure. Like, just kind of a, I'm going to throw in stuff that seems lurid to me at the
time.
Yeah,
but it was still tastefully done, even if it was just windows.
All I remember is, I believe she kicks in the bass on the music so that Marv can, like, beat the shit
beat
out of some people, and
people.
Maybe even some gunshots can fire in the back alley, and he won't get caught.
Also... Yeah. Being a bar owner in Sin City is like being a gentleman in anywhere else. So, I'm just saying, being a bar owner, that is a classy operation. If you're in Sin City and you're a bar owner, instead of a whore or a criminal.
Cannibal rapist.
No, cannibal rapists are well-regarded. They have
actually,
political connections.
Yeah. They have political power.
Just like in our world.
I think you should write up your notion and do the sort of formal essay on that. And I'll be curious to see what you think on the rest of the Sin City if you check some of those out.
Yeah, I'll have to I guess maybe grab a couple more of them, because I really didn't expect that I would like it as much as I did.
I'm shocked you liked it as much, but this makes I'm interested to hear it. Yeah.
Well, I think that there's a point like really early on in the book where I thought to myself, I'm gonna like this. And then almost immediately afterward, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to like this. And it was like back-to-back scenes, Marv beats up 6 cops.
Yeah.
And then immediately afterwards, he goes to his parole officer and he's like, ah, she's a lesbian, but it's fine, I guess. She's pretty hot.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, jeez. But like, you know, I interpreted it as just sort of like,
Marv is almost childlike in some ways.
Yeah.
And he has some childlike views.
The opportunity to show that Marv is, in fact, a brute, but that he's got the spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
if you ever, like, want to think about, like, payback on some enemies or whatever...
Oh, man.
There was a line we were talking... You were talking about at the end. It's just the hardest, cruelest of the shit.
Fuck.
When he's going to take out the big bad, right? Yeah. Or is it the priest guy?
Yeah, he's the cardinal. Yeah.
Well, do you remember... How's the line go? He's like... He's like, when I'm done with him, he's going to, like, torture him.
Yeah.
He's like, the hell I sent him to will seem like heaven compared to what I'm about to do.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, my God. That was so just... Good. Yeah, and then I think you see this image of his hands down below screen, and there's just, like, gurgling, like, spitting blood coming up, and you don't know what's happening. But this guy is, like, a frail little puddle of a dude, and he's just crumpling him.
Yeah.
just horrific.
And actually, it bookends the series. That is one of the last lines of the first issue.
Oh, interesting.
And it's also, like, one of the last lines of the last issue.
I was just thinking, as far as the visuals, that also has that, like, famously intense rain sequence and stuff that's super visually potent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have the Art of Sin City they did way back when.
Oh, yeah. It looks cool in that big, really oversized...
That's awesome.
If they were to do it... I have Art of Sin City. I think I bought it when the movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
I think I bought the connecting soft cover, so I've got all those.
Yep.
They're now onto, like, a third, another new vision. But if they were to do, like, the artist edition big hardcovers of that, I'd be tempted.
That would be awesome.
The other thing that I did think as a... And to clarify, going in, I'd never seen the movie.
Yeah.
And I'd never read the comic...
have you seen the movie now?
I haven't seen the movie now. I have looked up some stuff about the movie now.
I think the movie, I don't know how it holds up, but I really liked it at the time. It is a super faithful translation, but it also, to some extent, is weird because how faithful it is. Like, it's like, well, this is less a movie and you animating a comic. It's very odd, but I liked it.
Mickey Rourke brings something solid
Mickey
to the
Rourke's
role.
Pretty good, yeah.
That said, when I did see Kevin, my first thought was... Wow, that looks a lot like Elijah Wood.
Yeah.
So.
They would go on the cast, yeah.
So.
Somebody else thought that, too.
Apparently, I'm not alone. Says 2005.
All right, so changing topics just a little tiny bit.
Uh-huh.
Let's talk about Star Trek Lower Decks.
Right, Star Trek's only second cartoon ever. They did a cartoon in the early 70s that was honestly kind of close to a sequel to the TV show.
I'd say this features less cat people, but it features exactly the same number of cat
people.
That's
correct.
Which is awesome.
They invented a species called Cations, and that species shows up as the Doctor on the current series. Now, that series had, like, the voices of the original cast, the original one, and it was pretty straightforward, but also, like, blurred with a little bit of 70s cartoon weirdness, you know? This one, the new one, is from the one of the showrunners from Rick and Morty.
Mm-hmm.
It is has that sort of rapid-fire Rick and Morty gags, but without maybe the full-on... rawness of Rick and Morty.
Yes.
Because it also is a love letter to the Star Trek Next Generation era. But more specifically, there was an episode of Star Trek Next Generation in the last season called Lower Decks that focused on a group of ensigns, and, like, they were kind of, some of them were bucking for promotions. And you saw kind of, like, a week or two in their lives as they stressed out and sort of competed with each other. And that would go on to inspire this cartoon of the same name, in which that same sort of stuff is happening, but comedically.
So we got, what, four main characters?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have Ensign Boimler, with a ridiculous name like that, you know, he's the goofus.
But he's like the wannabe good guy.
He
wants to get promoted. He's the ass-kicker.
He's book smart. He's, he's like... goes on a secret mission for the captain to watch
Snitch.
The other character, Ensign Mariner.
Snitches get space.
Mariner is the would be the Bill Murray in Stripes.
Oh yeah,
she's a smartass, and kind of not quite like a slacker, but basically she's like actually super talented underneath it.
She's got no use for your rules, man.
She's
not part of your
student.
System.
Yes,
yeah.
She throws it on the ground.
She throws it on the ground.
That's true.
Then there's Ensign Rutherford, who's like kind of a little bit of an homage to a Geordi character. He's an engineer with cybernetic parts. The gag is that his little cybernetic interface was designed by Vulcans and periodically goes off making him say, like, super Vulcan things and ruining his date.
It tries to shut down his emotions, yeah.
Yeah.
That was kind of a fun gag. I like that.
Yeah.
And then, who's the other character?
I don't know. You're
going
to Star Trek podcast.
I said, that Ensign Tendi...
right.
She's an Orion who has never had any, like, main roles in Star Trek. They've been background characters, usually the sexy slave women trope from back in the day, and then they've periodically revisited it. Like, usually the guys are kind of pirates and outlaws.
Yeah.
But this actually, because there is at least some seriousness to this, and, like, visually and all that stuff, it's, like, a pretty serious homage to Next Generation.
Yeah.
Like, they went into crazy detail, actually, on it. But it looks like they may ultimately use this to explore the Orion culture in a way that hasn't really been explored in the other shows.
Yeah. So, yeah, these four are all different ensigns. She's medical, one of them's engineering, and the two of them are command.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of it's just, like, personal, interpersonal stuff, right? Like, basically the two of them...
Yeah. She's goofing on him because she caught him, like, doing a captain's log. Like, he's kind of daydreaming about how he would do it, and she busts him. It's like she caught him jerking off, basically, and she makes
arguably
fun of him.
Arguably more embarrassing.
Yes.
Well, that's in the future. That they don't jerk off in the future. They just make captain's logs.
She also gets drunk on, like, Romulan whiskey, starts spinning around a Klingon Batleth that she got, like, as contraband, and, like, chops him right in, like, the carotid artery.
Yes.
Or not carotid artery, but femoral artery?
Yes, yeah.
And that is the kind of goofiness of the show, and it is a little bit of a weird thing to connect the semi-serious mission stuff, because they are that's the big thing. Their ship is a second contact ship.
Yeah,
the idea is that almost like some other braver crew does, like, the first connection and all the difficult negotiations.
Right, we come and sign all the papers.
They sign the paperwork and iron things out.
I mean, it makes sense that it would exist, right? Like,
yeah.
It makes sense that you would have...
Is it not super exciting?
Well, something does happen in this episode, although it's not necessarily related to Second Contact per se, but it's the kind of thing that sort of did happen on the original Trek show, which is one of the crewmen gets bitten by a weird alien insect, and it kind of makes him zombie out when he goes up on the ship and start this full zombie plague. It's what would have been the A-plot in a regular Next Generation episode. I saw their behind-the-scenes thing where they talked about it, and he said, the A-plot is going on, it's just that we're not looking at it. We're looking at the people who have to deal with it behind the scenes.
Yeah, their A-plot is like the C-plot, and the A-plot is the B-plot. It's weird.
Exactly. We have to sort of see the blue-collar, lower-decks guys who kind of do the drudge work more have to deal with it.
I think all of us were not, like, super looking forward to this.
I want to say actively against it.
and Anna, where were you on this?
I mean, at first I was like, I don't like Rick and Morty, but it might be entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then now I'm like, I don't like Rick and Morty, but I'll watch another episode, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm in this kind of the same boat. Like, I watched it, and I wanted to like it. I was like, oh, I like Rick and Morty well enough. Maybe this will be fun. I like the Orville.
Yep.
Which just feels a lot like the Orville. But I was watching it, and I'm like, this feels disrespectful, weirdly.
Yeah.
And I'm not the biggest Star Trek fan in the world. Like, I don't have a huge attachment to it. But I was like, this kind of feels disrespectful. And at the same time, as it goes on, I'm like, well, but I like all the characters, and it is respectful to the basic tropes of Star Trek. And they clearly love Star Trek. The people doing it definitely love Star Trek.
Here's a quick question, and then I'll dive into something else, but... but comedy level, just did y'all find it funny?
I laughed a couple times.
I actually had a really hard time watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Largely because, like, the jokes are so rapid fire in that kind of, like, almost Naked Gun style.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
like after a certain point it just became white noise for me. Like,
yeah,
I maybe laughed a couple of times, like, with the Batleth thing, but that was like in the opening crawl.
Yeah.
One of my favorite bits in it, there was a few things I like. One is actually in the opening credit sequence, which is kind of a visual homage to Voyager's opening credits, where the Voyager's ship is sailing majestically around asteroids and through the rings of a Saturn-type planet and all this. It's like all that, but like basically with something goofy happening in everyone, like an asteroid hits, clips them. There's one where they're like, it's like the Borg are in this big battle with Romulans, and their ship is in the middle of it, and like one shot hits them, and they just turn around and fly away.
Yes.
And then you see them in the closing part just gliding by majestically, and then as they fully appear into the screen, you see this giant, like, space leech just gnawing, gumming their warp nacelle. But anyway, the thing that made me laugh is there's a sort of a big reveal at the end, and I guess I don't want to quite say what it is. It's kind of a neat hook that has to do with...
Mariner?
Mariner.
Yeah.
and the captain.
Mm-hmm. I like the reveal made me much more interested in the show,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
And by the way, I've heard that the second episode deals with some of the things that might seem a little disrespectful in an interesting way.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see that. But there's an admiral that the captain is talking to, and he's clearly trying to get out of a conversation, and he's like, I've got to go, admiral stuff. And it just kind of cracked me up, because they kind of, that is, this is a very Star Trek thing, is for the admirals to be real abrupt.
I do think the trouble they're going to run into, and then the thing that I'm sure they've thought of, is that you can't portray the senior breach crew as just complete narcissist assholes. Like, that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And they're almost like...
The
first officer, is he the one who gets bitten? He's the first officer.
I think,
right?
So, yeah.
And he kind of seems like a Zap Brannigan type dude. And I'm like, man,
right,
he can't be full on Zap Brannigan in Star Trek. You can't do that.
Right.
So I hope that they've got a little depth.
The captain, in addition to asking one of the ensigns to spy on another, she also does ignore the lower deck crew members and, like, credits
didn't remember his name.
Yeah, like, they credits the victory at the end exclusively to, like, the doctor or to somebody like that.
Yeah.
And, but again, I hear there's a little bit of stuff that's revealed at the end that makes me a little bit more open to some character depth that may show up in this.
Okay. I did really like the huge, scarred security guy.
The Bajoran guy?
We should blow him up.
Yeah, like, where they're like, the captain is like, any suggestions? And he's like, set off the warp core.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
It's just like, blow up the whole ship because at the first sign of trouble. He's clearly a sort of, in his way, homage to, like, season one Worf.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I was not wild about it, but I was surprised that I would even be giving it a second episode. And from what I've heard, it's worth giving it that second episode. We will we'll know in a few more. We'll probably report back in next week.
I definitely want to watch more, which is weird because at the same time I'm like, I didn't like it, but I also liked it. And I'm curious to see where they go.
You know what I've noticed? Just kind of casually looking at, I'm in a few Star Trek groups online, and I like just follow CBS's Star Trek official site. I see much, much more positive response to this than almost any other Trek show that I've seen lately.
Huh,
really? People are like, that was hilarious. I loved it. I think maybe in some ways just because it was so visually
the animation's beautiful.
Yeah. And like, it has a little bit of that Rick and Morty samey Adult Swim look, but it's very kind of lush. And the ship design is kind of neat.
The ship design is good. I like the uniform designs, actually.
Do you think that are people really responding to this better than they did to, like, Disco or Picard?
Yes. I think in some ways it's transgressions because it's animation.
Mm-hmm.
They don't feel like they have to take it too seriously. But in Discovery, they could do something where they're like, this doesn't feel like Trek. Like, it's too grim and gritty. And it's one thing that this is like, this doesn't feel grim and gritty.
Honestly,
and even Picard felt a little gritty.
I love Picard and I love Discovery, but of the three, this is the one that feels most like the Star Trek shows. Like, it's got uniforms and a ship, and they're all Starfleet. Like,
and it's also kind of done in one, and by the end of the episode, the two lead characters had kind of learned something.
Yeah.
to give a counterpoint, though, you do have the three Star Trek shows, and in all of them, the characters kind of, at least a little, behave like Star Trek characters. And in the third one, like, everybody's kind of a doofus, and they're just dunking on like, the positivity.
But it's kind of like the universe is a doofus in that one. Like, that's just kind of like how everybody is kind of done, portrayed. It's like comedic versions of everybody, even the noble people.
I guess.
I feel like I need to see more before I can quite say what they're wanting to do. If you hear the creator, showrunner behind the scenes, he is so into Trek, it's ridiculous.
Interesting.
I've heard him talking about the guest stars on the show, and he's like, we definitely don't want to just have, like, people come in to do a voice just to start going through everybody who could potentially be in this. He's like, I want it to mean something when they show up.
Yeah.
He is at least talking a good game of devotion to, like, Gene Roddenberry's ethos and stuff like that.
Interesting. Because, like, what I want is something a little more, like, aspirational than even, I guess, Disco.
Well, you know what's interesting is this was subversive but also aspirational because Ensign Mariner cuts through sort of Starfleet red tape to try and, in what will be a goofy scene, but she's trying to help out some farmers on this planet.
Yeah.
And that's what ends up helping, leading to the solution to it. But, they think she's smuggling weapons at first, and it turns out she's trying to help them with their their spider cow thing that they have.
Cow. That's fair.
Anyway, but I thought it'd be interesting to have a character that is both like her, that is both Starfleet but also kind of subversive, and that they may be acknowledging some of that. Sometimes Star Trek is real square and by the book,
yeah.
And that the lessons that they teach tend to be sort of by the bookish lessons. I thought it might be interesting to have one that where the lesson that you're learning is that sometimes you do need to go around normal channels. At the same time, I don't want Starfleet to be the enemy.
Yeah.
that is the line they're going to have to walk. It'll be interesting to see. And people should go check out Text Trek.
Yeah, that's my podcast. We will be covering it live every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Rain or shine.
See, I thought that your description of Lower Decks seemed a little practiced. That makes sense. You have a Star Trek podcast. You're very knowledgeable.
I've already talked about it.
And I've never been on that podcast before, so this is the first time I'm hearing about it.
You're
okay, Dave has left us because he is not as up on his TV.
It's true.
And Nick has not rejoined us because, of course, he is dead.
Goodbye, Nick.
He'll be back next week.
Rest in peace. Pour one out for my homie.
But Anna and I have both finished Season 2 of Doom Patrol and Season 2 of Umbrella Academy.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about both.
Yeah.
So let's start with Umbrella Academy, because I know you have many thoughts about Doom Patrol.
I do.
I actually thought Umbrella Academy Season 2 was better than Season 1.
I have some opinions about that.
Yeah?
I think that Season 2 was a lot more solid than I think the buzz is saying.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely think that Season 1 had, like, a little more personality.
Interesting. I mean, yes, I do think that you could tell that the budget went up.
Oh,
like,
they did
a lot more action and sci-fi stuff in this one. Yeah. There was...
Like, also, it was a period piece, so...
There was no dance sequences in this one, right? Did they?
There was one dance sequence, but it was shorter and nowhere near as good or as fun as the first one.
Right. But the action sequences were killer.
Yeah, they were.
That opening,
there was a lot of really cool
that
stuff.
That opening sequence in the fake Russian... When the Russian invasion, and you see them all using their powers, that was awesome. And Ben up there is his ghosty
with his
form.
Ghost form.
And that was super cool.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I know that it's, like, weird to say I think that I like their, like, toned-down TV costumes more.
Yeah.
But Vanya looks so damn cool in the coat with, like, the corpse paint look to her face and stuff. So I was like, really stoked to see that.
I love the costumes in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they did a pretty good job of translating them. And especially this season, like, Luther looks 100% better.
He looks so much better.
And I like Allison Hargreaves' 60s look a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I mean, 5 is great.
Yeah.
Oh, and Klaus's cult leader
Klaus's
look
cult
is
super
genius.
Good. Yeah.
So I talked about this on my podcast, TV Dudes.
Yeah.
And my compadre there, Les, hates Allison Hargreaves.
Really? Why?
He felt like she, like, abandoned her family and married this dude. She'd been there. He's like everybody else is like trying to get back, and she's like, well, I guess I'm gonna marry this dude now. And he also thinks that, like, when she uses her rumor powers, it's always like really dark. He's like, well, you can't just save your man from being beaten by the police, but you can make a racist hold a coffee cup until he burns himself. And I'm like, I think that's the point, is that her powers take control of her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also, like, I have, some more complicated feelings about that, because, like, I think that, for example, if it were me, and I were, like, thrown back in time, I mean, I would absolutely try to find people who were like me.
Yeah.
Because, like, my experience would be different in Dallas in the 1960s.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I don't necessarily think that that part is super, like, unrealistic, nor do I, like, blame her for it.
Yeah.
Because, like, when you live in a society that is at least kind of segregated, whether or not, like, enforced or otherwise...
Actively,
like,
hostile to
you. Yeah, yeah, you're gonna want to find people who are like you so you can be in a space that's not actively hostile to you.
Yeah,
but, like, I do think... I think that saving her husband from being beaten up by police and making a racist hold a cup of coffee until he burns himself, I don't necessarily look at those things as bad. But that might just be me.
Well, I think his point was, like, she won't use her powers when she needs to, but then she uses them, like,
for those purposes.
And it's like, why isn't she, like, why does she hold back? And then when she lets go, it's like bad. And I'm like, I think that's the point, is that
yeah.
that's why she doesn't use them, is because she knows that when she uses them, she becomes a different person.
This is also the less satisfying answer, but it's like the Firestorm in Legends of Tomorrow problem, which is to say that she can't use her powers because they're very complicated, because narratively someone will punch her in the fucking throat.
Right, yes.
Every time she uses them, unless she's using them to be bad.
Right. Either someone's going to punch her in the throat and ruin her powers, or she's the most powerful person in the room.
Yeah.
Like, she's more powerful than Vanya.
Yeah.
Because she can get Vanya to do whatever she wants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That said, what I don't get is why she doesn't do more stuff like, I heard a rumor that you danced like a monkey.
Yeah, why should have more fun with it?
To be silly. Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things. I think she is one of the uber... I mean, they're all screwed up. They all were raised by this monster.
A nightmare man.
Which, by the way, seeing younger seeing him throw him down with Diego,
yeah.
was great.
Loved that.
Yeah.
I actually really, really, really love the sequence where... he, like, gets the cheap shot on him with, yeah. like, the punching dagger.
Yeah, he's, like, amateur.
And he just calls him an amateur. It's yeah. so ruthless.
After, I mean, he just held his own with him. He's yeah. clearly skilled, but he's like, you didn't go for the kill shot, you're an amateur.
And in fact, like, the only reason he didn't just straight up win the fight is because, like, he was like, oh, God, this is my dad that I'm about to beat.
And
it's just so good.
It's because it's such an imbalance, because it means something to him.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know who this kid is. Nothing. He's like, yeah, you're just a guy I need to get through.
And also, like, I mean, the thing that I think is, like, so indicative of, like, I guess the personalities and, like, some of the character work that they laid down in the previous season,
yeah.
is it makes perfect sense for Diego to be in that position and to, like, have the emotional block in the way of stopping him from winning the fight. And it also makes perfect sense for his dad to just gut shot
yes,
him with a
does.
Punching dagger because he's an asshole.
Yep. I thought they did a really good job. Have you read the comics?
I actually haven't.
So I've read the comics and I like them, and at the same time can't remember most of them.
Yeah.
But I believe this is a pretty good translation of, like, the spirit of it, if not the plot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And tying it all around 1963 and Dallas and the assassination of JFK makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into the time travel thing a little bit more. The Kate Walsh as the handler is having way too much fun.
Yeah.
And I loved her imaginations of getting back in charge of the commission. Mm-hmm. I love number 5 just being over it.
I love number 5.
Number 5 is so good.
He's so good.
And I love that she's like, look, I need someone to murder everyone who runs the commission. He's like, yeah, okay, I'll do it.
That sequence was super good too.
I
can't remember what song played.
I can't either. The music is super good.
But the music, I like the music in season 1 better, but like I can't deny that it's still like excellent in season 2.
The use of the Backstreet Boys was
so
inspired.
Strange, but so good.
Yeah. Which brings us to the Swedes.
Yeah.
They were great bad guys.
They were. And I think somebody on my, like, social media feed was complaining about how they were, like, super, like, I guess underwhelming as villains, maybe because they didn't get a lot of screen time
yeah.
like Hazel and Cha-Cha.
Well, I know a lot of dialogue.
Yeah. Almost none, in fact, except screaming.
Yep.
But, like, quite frankly, I actually like that a lot. I think it makes a good quirky villain, like,
yeah.
way more interesting.
Same. I think people might have been wanting Hazel and Cha-Cha again, because Hazel and
yeah.
Cha-Cha were so memorable and fun.
They were.
But I like going the other way.
Yeah, so do I. And I guess, like, also the handler kind of filled the role that Hazel and Cha-Cha did in
she
this
did.
Season.
And her daughter, who, by the way, a dark mirror of what happened with the Umbrella Academy. She adopted this girl,
mm-hmm.
who it turns out is one of the Umbrella Academy generation,
mm-hmm.
used her for her own purposes. Her relationship with Diego is really fun.
Yeah.
The reveal at the end that she can mirror powers.
Really cool. And,
yeah.
and they sort of, like, teased it a bit, like,
yeah.
in the fight where she and 5 are going at it.
Yeah.
And they never actually show, like, her do the teleport, because
right.
she always teleports when he does.
Right.
And so they, like, sort of disguise it on screen.
Yeah.
And so, like, I guess that was, like, almost 5 episodes that they went without revealing that
yeah.
after having teased it, which was neat, and
yeah.
I didn't figure it out.
I didn't either.
So...
Also, I really like Vanya's story. Giving her amnesia was a good way to get around her, like, her trauma.
Yeah. Also, finally, a show where Ellen Page is as gay and powerful as she is in real life.
I thought that was interesting, because I don't think in the comics they went that direction. I think it's because they have Ellen Page.
Yeah, well, and I remember distinctly as I was watching season 1, I was thinking to myself, like, it's Ellen Page, like, with her, like, wearing, like, fucking Dickies and, like, a flannel shirt, and I'm like, I can't believe they let her dress like this. My suspension of disbelief is ruined. She looks like a lesbian. I can't believe she's dating a man. And then in this,
yeah.
Well, she's also queer.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah. I do think it's possible that Ellen Page just kind of showed up in whatever she felt like. So like
no, oh, she's I legitimately
she's the biggest
that.
Star we've got. She wear whatever she wants.
Wear whatever the hell she wants.
Yeah. And there's like, well, I guess we need her powers. We can CGI over it.
I mean, that opening sequence where she like grabs the tank shell yeah. and rips it apart would be, in my opinion, a lot more impactful if she's just wearing like combat boots and a flannel. So
I liked her story. I liked Luther's story with Jack working with Jack Ruby.
Oh man, super weird, but also cool.
And I thought also, like, we talk about her, Ellen Page, they also had a, lesbian stories are a little more common than gay male stories.
They are.
But they did, they had Klaus and his
yeah.
Vietnam buddy.
Yeah, which is, man, I don't know, I really like Klaus, and because Klaus was not gay in the comic.
No,
right?
No, I don't think they in got fact, too much into it. Yeah,
I assume probably nobody was, just because no. the time period that... When did this come out? Like, 2007? Like,
yeah, some of that ballpark.
I was say, because I remember, because MCR was really big when I was in high school,
yeah.
and I remember that all the people who were really into MCR were like, this is perhaps the greatest comic ever written. but anyhow, just, I assume based on when it came out, that probably wasn't a thing, and I was, like, super stoked when it ended yeah. up being.
Yeah.
Sort of like, it was a little surprising for me. Because I think that at the time that this dropped on Netflix, like, a couple episodes of Doom Patrol had come out.
Yeah.
And I think they had touched on Larry being gay in
right.
that, and I was thinking, like, well, this show now has big shoes to fill, because someone else did the weird superhero show, and they didn't shy away from it.
It's true.
But, of course, this one didn't either, so
yeah.
I'm very pleased.
I'm very happy with it, and it comes to another big cliffhanger ending.
Oh, yeah.
It was so good.
Which, I'm actually... At the end of the first season, I thought to myself that, like, if it doesn't get renewed, this would be fine.
Yeah.
Like, I would be happy with just watching, like, one season that was just a character piece.
Yeah, but it was a big cliffhanger. It was like, oh, the world is ending, and they time travel, and it's like, well, let's see what happens, and that's
yeah.
left off.
But, I mean, like, they didn't give you a taste of what happens.
Right, right.
So the cliffhanger isn't as enticing. But
no,
this one,
yeah.
they, like, drop them right into the middle
yeah.
of the problem, and you know exactly what's going on,
yeah.
and then suddenly it is not on anymore.
And they've already said season 3 is coming. I think they've
yeah.
already renewed it, because this did really well for them.
Oh, I assume so.
And also, the thing I liked as I was watching this ending is that it's... I thought, because they'd ended the first season such a big cliffhanger, I'm like,
yeah.
oh, they're giving them, like, the nice... We're going to, like, wrap everything up with a nice little bow.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find out, oh, no, it's not a nice little bow. It's a big, giant cliffhanger.
It is, in fact, worse than that.
Yes. I guess, from what I hear, and I have not read the third volume yet,
they doing the third volume?
I gather the third volume ends where the second season ends. So the third season will be stuff the comics has not covered yet.
Oh, wait, so hang on. The Hotel Oblivion storyline
is something completely different.
Involved?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. All right, well, maybe I should read The Umbrella Academy so I have a frame of reference.
Yeah, I would recommend it. I've liked the first two. I was waiting for a collection of the third
yeah.
one.
And
okay. now, because I'm a snob, I'm waiting for the hardcover.
Yeah, that's fair.
all right, speaking of cliffhanger endings, let's talk Doom Patrol Season 2. Now, Doom Patrol, I think... Your favorite show on TV?
It's definitely... So, admittedly, I'm not watching a lot of TV these days.
Yeah, me neither.
But, like, I used to be, like, really big into, like, prestige TV, like, probably, like, maybe 5 or 7 years ago. About the time... About the time, like, I guess Game of Thrones Season 2 was
yeah.
coming on,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
was when I was watching nearly everything that, like, HBO and Showtime put out. And... I know that this is an unpopular opinion, especially in the store, but I think Doom Patrol is, like, one of the best shows that I've watched, like, in the past 10 years.
I really like Doom Patrol. I watch a ton of TV.
Yeah.
So my bar for, like, top 10 is pretty high.
Yeah.
And it's really good. Like, I don't know if it sits in my top 10,
mm-hmm.
but I definitely think Season 2 was a growth on what was a good Season 1.
Yeah. Because, I mean, Season 1 ultimately, and like, they even make fun of it in Season 1, which I am well aware of because I've just been recently rewatching it with my partner.
Uh-huh.
But, like, Season 1 is just one character piece. It,
right.
It, in fact, very similar to how The Umbrella Academy Season 1 happens, where it's literally about the team getting their shit together.
Yeah.
And, like, growing up as people.
Yeah.
So, I guess, like, this is definitely an improvement in that you're seeing the characters actually interact with one another and, like, actually be superheroes.
It's also a little less meta. The
it
first
is.
One, because of that Mr. Nobody was a little heavy on the meta stuff, which I liked.
Yeah.
But this one, the sort of their bad guy, is one of Dorothy Spinner's personalities.
Yeah,
and the chief's just inability to be a person.
Yeah, the chief. I mean, the chief sort of. I mean, he's a bad guy.
Yeah,
like he's a villain.
Yes.
Like he very much like, you know, the fan theory that like Charles Xavier is a villain.
Yeah.
Yeah. The chief is that, but like explicitly in the narrative.
Yeah, this is a Morrison invention that the chief basically created the Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
Was it in the comics that he was trying to seek immortality? Was that why he did it?
I don't remember specifically, like, his motivation behind why.
Yeah.
It's possible that that's what it was.
But that's a good motivation.
It is.
It makes sense that he's, like, trying to find... And then...
And to be fair, he did achieve immortality for all of these people.
Yes, he did.
Just in a shitty way.
He's just trying to find one that he likes. And I like that the reason... I think that they humanize him a little bit. The reason he's trying to find immortality isn't just for himself... It is for his daughter. He wants to be there to protect and to protect the world from Dorothy Spinner.
Yeah, and Dorothy did not have a biological relation to him in the comic.
No.
That's like purely an invention for the TV show.
But I liked it.
And I think it worked out really well, and I definitely think it makes Niles Calder a much more compelling character in the show, because he does have that anchor to, like, personhood that I think an audience can relate to.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I mean, I don't have any children, but I have frequently heard from a number of people who do that. They're like, I would do nearly anything for my child.
Yeah. It also ties in nicely to, thematically, because Larry has a kid.
Yeah.
And Cliff has a kid, and so it gives them all a bit of things they bond over.
Yeah, and I mean, you know how I feel strongly about big, dumb characters who punch problems and don't fall down when they get hit?
Yeah.
And Cliff is, like, very much that character in the show.
Brendan Fraser is so good.
He's so good. And his relationship with his kid is, like, great.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that moment where he's, like, literally breaking down because his robot body isn't working.
Yeah.
And he's, like, trying to make the phone call. And he's just so fucking mad that he just screams into the answering machine.
Oh, man.
And I was like, oh, this is, like, really painful to watch. Because you're thinking, like, oh, this is just another instance of you being a little too much, dude.
Yeah.
Man,
that whole thing where he's frozen in place and the hipster dude comes along and won't let him make calls until he does shout-outs for his friends.
God, it's so good. As I was watching it, I was like, if you replaced this character with Jason from The Good Place, the scene would be exactly the same.
This is true. Yes, it's a good point.
So,
yeah, he's not fazed at all about a robot man. He's just he's like, oh, well, this would be fun.
Yeah, he looks at it and he's like, we are in Florida. So,
I thought the girl that got played Dorothy was great.
So good.
I thought her story, like, is really tragic and really interesting.
Yeah.
And an interesting counterpoint to Jane, who is also, like, a multiple personality with powers. And
yeah.
Jane's... I can't remember. Is it Diane Guerrero? I think that's her
name.
She's amazing in this.
She's,
like,
so fucking good.
I liked her in Orange is the New Black, but she is so good here.
Yeah. Was she in Orange is the New Black?
She's in Orange is the New Black.
Okay.
Yeah.
The only place that I had seen her before Doom Patrol was actually on... there's a show on the CW that's like a parody of telenovelas called Jane the Virgin.
Yeah.
And she played the best friend on that, which is very much like a kooky comedy role.
Yeah.
And then in this, she's like really flexing her acting chops, which is super fun.
This is, and the whole story of like what's going on with Miranda and all that kind of stuff was really tragic and interesting.
So I have some really strong opinions about that.
Yep.
Most notably that you'll notice that it never was like a forefront thing. Like you never had to see it. It was all implied.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I really think it should have stayed that way.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's just a real, real bummer of a move to, no matter what show you are doing, no matter what it is, like, what narrative you're trying to convey, to, like, show a graphic coercion and sexual assault on screen.
Yeah.
Just a bad move. Furthermore, hugely bad move to do it right before a cliffhanger, as you don't know you're getting picked up for a season 3.
Yeah, that's... If they don't get a season 3, they've really just run this into the ground.
They have. And if there is no season 3, it went from being my favorite thing on television, quite possibly in the past 10 to 15 years, to being something that I can never show to anyone ever again.
Yeah. You know what's funny is I've been watching TV for so long, I have so many heartbreaks like this where it shows that should have been great and then they do these cliffhangers and never get resolved. And it's like it's little orphan shows. And it doesn't happen as much anymore. And I'll be kind of sad if it happens with Doom Patrol. I mean, it happened with Santa Clarita Diet. They had a really great cliffhanger.
Man, I know.
And they just wrapped that. And, like, it doesn't happen a lot, which makes it more tragic when it does, because they should all know better at this point.
Yeah.
Because I watched this, and I thought, surely...
This isn't the season finale.
I mean, it's episode 9.
Yeah.
It is 9-episode seasons.
They got a short season, because so I assume the merger and the move to...
Or COVID.
It could be COVID.
I mean, might have had a plan. They might have been planning to do more episodes, and then COVID shut. This is like the writer's strike, and the writer's strike cut short a bunch of shows.
Yeah, maybe.
But yeah, it is unfortunate.
It just feels bad.
I also agree with you. I think, to some extent, I think you got to trust your audience, especially on a show like Doom Patrol. Like, if we've held in for this point, we can figure out what's going on with Jane or Dad. Like, we don't need to see it. But I think probably someone was like, "Well, you should probably show it so people know what's going on."
I mean. I hate to say this, and I know that this is so often my opinion when I come on the podcast, but, like, you'll note that there were a lot of Jane-centric episodes in this season, and only one of them that I can think of was directed by a man.
Yeah.
And that one was the one that had to show the graphic sexual assault.
Right.
And I assume probably it was not necessarily something to do with, like, we think our audience is dumb and we want to show it, but more like, so that, like... Hey, we're on HBO now. HBO's the adult network. Yeah. We can be edgy.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine who was watching it after I did actually was, like, specifically asked ahead of time before she went into the episode. Yeah. Was like, hey, is there anything, like, that I need to know going in?
Right.
And I was like,
yeah.
There's, like, a prolonged scene of what I can only describe as graphic sexual assault for, like, straight up, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's not good.
No.
Not good at all.
Yeah.
In fact, it was one of the few missteps that I think this show has had, period.
Yeah. I also think it becomes more serialized to get to the second half. Like, we get really into the Crazy Jane stuff and Dorothy. The earlier stuff, though, with the sex ghosts...
Holy shit.
The sex men and the astronauts and bringing in Vlada Vostok?
Yeah, oh, crap. Basically, Negative Woman.
Negative Woman, yeah.
I can't remember her name. Valentina Vostok.
Valentina Vostok. Because the two of them merged and became Rebus, right?
No, so Rebus in Morrison's run was half Larry Traynor and half... his doctor who had been caring for him.
Oh, okay.
And the negative spirit came back and was just like, Larry Traynor's not good enough for me anymore. I need more.
Yeah, okay.
So, but like Valentina Vostok was, I think, replaced Larry in the Doom Patrol
at
some point between like when the Doom Patrol was like their sort of like, to me, my X-Men type camp team to Morrison.
Yeah.
But like...
That was interesting, and the whole her two compadre astronauts who she had like reanimated as like a script.
Yeah, well, I love that in particular because it's like such a. In fact, Dave and I were talking about this the other day with an episode of Doctor Who, where it's sort of like an astronaut. He says like it's like the. I can't remember what it is. He's like, oh, hey, who turned out the lights?
Oh, the library. Yeah.
And it's, like, almost, like, played for, like, a comedic bit at the beginning, and then you realize that, like, oh, those are his dying words.
Yeah.
And, like, that sort of, like, level of, like, weird, bittersweet, like, oh, it's funny.
Right.
Oh, I'm an asshole because I laughed at that.
Also,
with those astronauts,
Mark Shepard playing their Constantine stand-in.
Oh, man, I love him. He's so good.
And the funny thing is, we looked this up, because we were curious, Dave and I, about, like, was it supposed to be Constantine, or was it you and I that looked this up?
I think it was maybe you and
I. Yeah, we looked this up and we were like, oh, in the comics it was supposed to be Constantine, but they couldn't do it or something.
Yeah, but no, I mean, they made that character for Doom Patrol. And I wonder if maybe it was because Morrison and Alan Moore, like, didn't get along at the time.
Wizard fight.
Yeah, they had a wizard fight, yeah.
this was a really good second season. I'll be real upset, like... If they had not done a season two, I would have been like, oh, that's too bad. I really like season one.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to be upset if they don't do a season three.
Yeah, I will actively be very angry.
Yeah.
I will be after that where Randy has been with DC for the past 5 years.
Well, I don't see how anything could be uncertain with DC right now. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah, nothing's up in the air
there
right now.
Nothing up in the air with DC. All right. That'll about wrap it up for us this week. And I just realized we have different catchphrases.
It's true.
All right. We're going to do it at the same time?
That'll be really muddy.
Okay, yeah. All right. 3, 2, 1.
Babylon, Xena.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.